The following has been rated PC for politically correct.
Sports Talk 750.
My quick smells like fresh toast.
That's what she said.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play.
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA.
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. And we have a very busy Wednesday show geared more mostly towards the game of basketball. We're going to talk NBA. We're going to talk high school. But Travis, I want to start by talking about the story that dominated the national sports headlines last night. Josh McDaniels, not the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts.
I think you and I touched this on Monday where we were kind of, you know, on the fence. Is he going to take the job? And then it broke that, yeah, the press conference was coming. And then when we went off air yesterday, he decided not to take the job. And you know what? I know he's getting beat up about it because he quit on the Colts, basically, but people change their mind. It happens. The NFL's a business, and it happens.
Look, let me be real about my perception of Josh McDaniels. He's very Lane Kiffin-esque.
He's a snake.
I view Josh McDaniels as Lane Kiffin 2.0. Okay, now I'm not saying anything negative about their coaching abilities because Lane Kiffin has proven that he's a great head coach. I think that Josh McDaniels has proven that he's a great coordinator. I talked about the maturity level of Josh McDaniels. Okay, and I said that I believe that a second stint at head coach for McDaniels would work because he is more mature. I think it was a humbling experience for him in Denver. I thought that once he left Denver, he went and became the offensive coordinator in St. Louis and then went back to New England. Great learning curve for this kid. Probably learned an awful lot. And yet, he's more mature. Forget all that. This is a definite sign of immaturity.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I view Josh McDaniels. I think he's a great mind. You know, look, people can say what they want. No, he didn't publicly say he was going to accept the head coaching job. There was an agreement in place. There was an agreement in place, obviously. Okay, is it wrong for him to do what he did? Yes, absolutely. However, if I'm an Indianapolis Colt fan, I wouldn't be upset. I wouldn't be upset, and I'll tell you why. I don't think that anyone else out there was going to come to Indianapolis if that job was still open. Like, I don't see anyone out there that you would target that's still available or that's not available anymore. Let me put it that way. So I don't think this sets Indianapolis back heavily. I think there are guys out there. There are retread coaches that would be available. So, you know, if I'm a Colts fan, I'm not too upset because you want someone that's 100% committed. He obviously was not. This tells me that it saves you from Josh McDaniels jumping ship later on down the road. Because yeah. I think that's what you would ultimately get here. The guy, he's not mature. He hasn't matured. Josh McDaniels is Josh McDaniels. This is the same guy that coached the Denver Broncos. That's what this tells me.
Yeah, and there's just, now you know that there's reassurance that when Bill Belichick decides to step away, that Josh McDaniels is going to take over for the New England Patriots because there's no way he goes back without knowing that he's going to be probably the head coach and waiting in New England.
Yeah, Chris Ballard, who's the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts, said, I just said, I need a yes or a no answer. Are you in or out? He said, we went around for a minute, and he said, he's out. I said, okay, we're going to move forward. Wish you the best of luck. He also said that the rivalry is back on.
No, it's not. It's not. You're 0-7 against him, and you've won one meaningful game against the Patriots. It's not a rival, so stop.
Well, a rivalry, both teams have to win in order for it to be a rivalry. But at the same time, I can understand why a general manager would be upset. I get
he
it.
He should be.
A general manager is different than the fans, okay? That's different because, again, you had a business agreement on the table. And I really don't know what else to say outside of the fact that it is an immaturity level. Now, I think this stands look, I can go back and erase the entire segment we did about the Patriots, because losing Matt Patricia and not losing Josh McDaniels is completely different than losing Matt Patricia and losing Josh McDaniels.
Patriots win today.
No doubt.
Yeah, the Patriots are big winners today because they get Josh McDaniels back. You can fill that void with the defensive coordinator spot. So, yeah, but getting Josh McDaniels back is a win for New England.
Let's take a look at what else we have on the show today. We're going to be joined by Dan Clayton of SaltCityHoops.com, an excellent Utah Jazz mind. You know, the trade deadline is now less than 24 hours away, so Dan is going to join us to talk about the possible moves for the Utah Jazz. You think they move anyone?
I think it's possible. I know they're on a win streak and they've played better, but it doesn't change my mindset that this team's still not going to make the playoffs, and I think they should still move those pieces.
I think there's a possibility they could get into the playoffs. I thought they were a playoff team at the beginning of the season. They keep playing the way they are right now. Yeah, they're going to be a playoff team if they keep playing the way they are. You win 8 out of 10 the rest of the way, odds are you're going to get into the playoffs, especially with some of the teams floundering in the West. It's an odd topic. I could see the Jazz moving as many as 4 guys. I could see him moving 1. I could see them making a really minuscule move. So we'll talk to Dan Clayton about that. Also tonight here on KOAL, we'll bring you Emory High School basketball. The Emory Spartans are at home for the final time this year, taking on the Grand Red Devils. And we're going to be joined by Coach Todd Jeffs next segment. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA. Short slate of games, 5 o'clock, Brooklyn. We'll take on Detroit. We get Houston at Miami. 6 o'clock hour, Minnesota at Cleveland. The Jazz will travel on the road to meet the Memphis Grizzlies. We get the Pacers at the Pelicans. Nightcap game, San Antonio on the road to take on the Phoenix Suns. That's a quick look at what's happening and a rather slow day for the national sports scene outside of the Josh McDaniels, Indianapolis Colts, New England Patriots saga. The NFL's a year-round sport. I swear it never stops.
The NFL's king, and the NFL, there's something going on every day. So, yeah, NFL's still king.
We've got a break for just a moment. Local sports recap is coming up, and then we'll be joined by Coach Todd Jeffs and, of course, Dan Clayton of SaltCityHoops.com. It's all straight ahead here on Drive Time Sports.
Hello, sports fans.
Time for sports.
Let the games begin.
Turn on the radio.
It's time to talk high school basketball on the Coach's Corner.
Tonight, the final home game of the season for the Emory High School boys basketball squad. Can't believe that. 2 games left in the regular season. The finale will be Friday on the road against San Juan. But it is a big game for Emory. Right now, they can climb as high as number 4 in the Region 15 standings. And it's also very simple. You win 1 game or North San Pete loses 1 game and it's over, you get into the playoffs. It's that simple. So Emory definitely controls their own destiny to get in to next week's play-in round for the state championship tournament. Joining us right now to talk about last week's loss to Manti on Friday and tonight's senior night against the Grand Red Devils, we have Coach Todd Jeffs of the basketball program. Coach, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Always good to be here, Jordan.
Coach, we go into the final week of the regular season, and you and I were just talking off of the air about how fast the season has gone by. Tonight, the final home contest. We'll enter tonight's game sitting at 4-6, but all in all, looking back on it, I mean, there's been a lot of opportunities throughout this season. In fact, Friday night, the game against Manti, that was one that was there for the taking. You guys managed to battle back and tie it, take the lead going into the in the third quarter, took the lead. It was tied going into the fourth, just could not overcome an offensive push from Manti in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, and that's happened to us 2 or 3 times this year that we've been in the fourth quarter with chances to win games. And unfortunately, the other team's players make some plays and our guys don't, and we've come up with losses. I think, you could point at 3 or 4 games during our league play that's happened. And, part of it is our youth. I understand that, but part of it's just not making plays. We get right down to crunch time, and their guy makes a play, and our guy doesn't, and we paid for it on the record, So just something we got to improve at.
Yeah, this is a young team. I mean, but you guys have played 20 games up to this point, 10 games in region play. And I know in talking to some of the college coaches, they say, by January, we want our freshmen playing like sophomore. I'm sure it's the same concept, right, in high school basketball. You want your sophomores or your juniors playing like seniors by the time you hit a certain threshold in the season.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think that, after a full season, everybody should be ready to play and should be making those plays. And I think offensively we've made some really big plays. We've done a nice job, but defensively we haven't shut the other team's best player down by any means. It seems like everybody that plays us, their good player, seems to have a career night against us, and that's something we've got to do. We've got to eliminate, and we've got to do a better job of, you know, making it tough on some people, and we haven't done that so far.
Matt Nelson was fantastic in that Manti game, but you guys did go to a box and one at one particular time or a couple of particular times in that game. Coach, how happy were you with the way your kids performed in that defensive set?
Well, I thought it slowed him down and, you know, maybe confused Manti a little bit for a minute. But they picked it up that fourth quarter, and, you know, and then we had to go man-to-man, and then it was lights out. We just, our help side defense was horrible, and it seemed like a layup drill without, you know, we had a guy there. But it wasn't like he was in front of Matt Nelson. I mean, he did a great job and ended up with 30-plus points, and really, you know, that was the difference in the game. And you know, that's the one thing that I keep coming back to is we're just not physical and strong enough defensively to shut some of those kids down. And I don't think to beat a team like that, I don't think you got to completely shut the kid down, but you got to make it tough on him. And I don't think we really even did that.
Yeah, I don't have the final statistics in front of me, Coach, but as far as the rebound category goes, just going off the top of my head, I think over the last three or four games, you guys have done fairly decent on the boards. I mean, it's been fairly comparable to the opposing team, and I know that was a big point of emphasis when we talked at the beginning of the season as well.
Yeah, it really is, and it's something that we work on. And, you know, the kids we're putting on the floor aren't really big and physical enough to just dominate somebody rebounding-wise. But, yeah, we got to hold our own, and I think we've done that at times. The thing that we've really struggled with is our defensive rebounding. It seems like, you know, when another team misses a shot, it's a 50-50 ball to go get it, and we haven't done a very good job there. And you know, you give those offensive rebounds up and give extra possessions to a team that's already a little bit, you know, better than you physically, then you really pay for it. And I think that's been a concern. Overall, I think, like you said, our rebounding numbers have been comparable. So it's something that I, you know, can't complain about a whole bunch. But when you give up those offensive rebounds, boy, that just really hurts.
Especially against a team like Manti. And I think if we go into tonight's game against Grand, it's another team that if they, you know, if you give them second, three, or four, you know, opportunities on an offensive set, they're going to make you pay. The last time, it was a 90-86 game, Coach, and I'm sure the majority of their points were off second-chance shots that night.
Well, they really were, and they're a team that's a little deceiving. You watch them warm up, and they're not, you know, big and overpowering. They've got the kid in the middle that you know is a tall kid, but he's not real physically strong. But boy, their kids are athletic. You know, the Schultz kid is just a big time athlete. He's quick and aggressive and gets a lot done. He's not a great basketball player, but he makes a living off his speed and his jumping ability. And then the number 20 kid, I can't think of his name right off the top of my head, but you know, he's a really nice ball player. He can, you know, do a lot of nice things for them. And, you know, again, it's a matter of getting stops. To me, that's where our success is going to be determined. We've shown the ability to score points on anybody we've played, and we've been pretty consistent throughout. We haven't been really shut down by anybody. But on the other end, we give up big nights and big numbers to the other team, and that's something we've got to do here the last couple of weeks of the season to give ourselves a chance to win is do a better job defensively. And I told our guys last night that, you know, the one thing I'm looking for today is some defensive intensity, some fierceness, and some, you know, wanting to disrupt the other team's offensive flow. And that's who I'm looking for on the floor tonight, is some of our guys that are willing to do that.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan Boys Basketball Squad. Coach, you did mention the big four grand, Cameron Hoppenstead, who went to the high post, I mean, early and often in that first matchup. And, I mean, obviously, when you have a big like Hoppenstead, you're going to go to the high post coming against the extended 2-3 zone. How do you guys match that and out of the 2-3 zone if they're going to utilize the high post and Hoppenstead off of the elbows?
Well, one thing we can do is we can play that, we call it a diamond and one. But we can play that and put Kyson Stilson in front of him and try to eliminate some of his touches. You know, and I don't think he really, I mean, they went to him a lot, and he himself didn't hurt us, but he really distributed the ball well. He made a couple of those passes that were inside out passes and hit some 3-point shooters. And so, you know, we got to eliminate his touches there a little bit. And so we can do that, and we practice that, and I think that's something that we can do. But again, you know, I feel like I'm trying to patch things together, you know, just to try to eliminate touches for a guy when I should be just, you know, looking at our guys and saying, you know, go get some, go get after that kid. You know, we've got a body there. Now that we've got you in position, go make a play. You know, disrupt him a little bit. Be a little bit more physical. Be a little bit more aggressive. And I think that's the point we're at with this team is we, you know, we're trying to patch stuff together instead of just getting fierce and being tough and coming up with some of those defensive stops that I know we're capable of doing because we've done it at times. We just don't do it real consistently and throughout entire games.
I know, Coach, that we talked about the kids maturing and being a young team, and I definitely want to talk about a positive. And one of the things that I just continue to be so impressed with is Brax Jensen as a sophomore. I mean, offensively, I think this kid is playing well beyond his years. I mean, his court vision has been off the charts, especially as of late. And we go back to the game against Manti. He was very, very good in that game. I mean, that's a fair assessment, right? If we're talking about a kid that's playing above his class, Brax has been that kid.
Yeah, he's really come a long ways. I think the Manti game over there, he really struggled with some turnovers, and then the fourth quarter against South Sevier, you know, he struggled. And from that point on in the season, I think he's turned the corner. He's really matured and come a long ways, and he's taking care of the basketball and finding open players and doing a great job for us distributing the ball. And he's also, you know, a really good three-point shooter, and he doesn't show that enough. I think he passes up some shots that I think he should be taking. But, you know, again, that's just a kind of a process of maturing and finding out what works for him. But he's done a super job for us offensively, and he's a guy tonight that I look to defensively. He's got to pick it up and be disruptive, and he can do that. He's got great hands. He's not, you know, extremely quick with his feet, but his hands are really quick, and he can be a really disruptive defender when he wants to be, and I think that's tonight something that we've got to get out of him.
As far as coaching a kid like Brax, who is a pass-first type player, I mean, is that fun? Is it maddening? I mean, is it interesting to coach a kid that can create? I mean, how do you coach someone like that has the ability but at the same time wants to be a distributor first?
Well, I like it. You know, it lends itself well to the team. You know, you get a kid that can dominate the ball like that and then create for other players, and it really lends to a good team atmosphere for everybody. And Kyson Stilton's capable of that, too. I think, you know, he's been getting to the basket real well and finishing some plays on his own, but he's got that ability, you know, to distribute the ball. And when you got two guys like that that can both create, getting into the paint, and finding, you know, some three-point shooters, and we've got a ton of them on this team that can shoot. I mean, you know, that lends itself well to great offense. And, you know, I talked to my assistant coaches yesterday and said, you know, they were talking about, well, we can do this offensively, we can do that. And I said, yeah, we can do all that. But we've proven ourselves offensively. Nobody slowed us down. You know, every team we play, we're putting up big numbers. We're averaging over 70 points a game, and that should be enough to win a lot of basketball games. Our focus and energy really needs to be on that defensive end, and that's what I'm looking for tonight. And I told our guys, if you want to stay on the floor, play defense. We can put offensive players on the floor, and we can make combinations work there that way. But we got to play defense. We got to lock somebody down, and that's where we need to really turn the corner here the last couple of weeks of the season. And if we do that, we can beat anybody. We've played the best teams in 3A. And I firmly believe we can beat anybody, and we need to be that team that gets on a roll late in the season and goes into that state tournament with some confidence and, you know, smoke some people offensively and then you know, stop them defensively. And if we can do that, we got a chance at this whole thing.
We can end with this, Coach. It is senior night tonight. The squad only has two seniors on the team, Easton Gordon, who has kind of been a key part of this basketball team now for a couple of seasons, but then also Tyler Butler, who moved in as a first-time starter on the varsity squad this year. Two seniors from opposite ends of the spectrum, but they appear to be two seniors that just have great attitudes.
Yeah, they really do. And one you're forgetting is Alex Orozco, a kid
right.
that came in as a transfer student from and he's done a nice job for us too. And so those three kids, you know, we'll honor them tonight. And Ethan's just been fabulous for 2 years defensively. He's such a presence for us. And then this year he shot the ball so well from the 3-point range that he's really given us a big boost there. And he makes some uncanny shots around the basket. You know, he's outsized when he goes in there, and he's able to really get his shot off and make a lot of points right at the basket, and that's fun to watch. And then Ty's just, you know, he got off to that great hot shooting the first half of the season from 3-point range, and you know he can really fill it up out there, and so that's fun. And then Alex, like I said, he's came off the bench for us this year and just really given us a big boost defensively, and then. Kind of funny, but he'll make a critical shot here and there, and he's made a difference in some games that way. So, you know, it's sad to see those kids go, and nice to be able to honor them tonight in our last home game.
You definitely didn't mean to forget Alex. I'll tell you, though, it's so rare, and I don't know that I've ever seen this, Coach, in all the years I've been associated with high school sports, a kid who plays one season, it just happens to be his senior season, and he makes an impact. I mean, Alex, he's rare when it comes to, you know, to that kind of talk.
Yeah, he is. He's, you know, we kind of, during tryouts, I talked to him and I said, listen, you know, you're going to struggle trying to pick up our offensive schemes. And at times he has struggled, you know, where we're trying to run a play and he doesn't know where it's going because some of the stuff we do takes a little bit of time to become accustomed to. And, you know, I think his natural position is point guard. And so he's playing behind Brax there. And, you know, Brax is pretty polished with what he's doing on that stuff. And so, you know, it's been a struggle for him to pick up, but his attitude is incredible. I mean, he is just a team guy first, and he's really willing to get his minutes when he can. And when he goes out there, he plays his tail off. And so it's been fun to see him kind of fit into the program.
Well, Coach, it's always fun to talk about the program. Thank you again for the time today. Best of luck tonight against Grand, and we'll see you at the game.
Sure enough, should be fun.
Again, that's Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Sporting Boys Basketball Squad. Again, live coverage of tonight's contest is set for 6:30 with Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. We'll follow that up with tip-off immediately after. We've got a break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We'll talk Utah Jazz Basketball. That's next. We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. We're going to stick with basketball, but move over to the Utah Jazz for this particular segment. And again, on the eve of the trade deadline, a lot of rumors circulating around the Utah Jazz, who have played much, much better as of late. Now, joining us right now over the phone to talk a bit about the Jazz, we have Dan Clayton. He joined us fairly regularly last season. He's a columnist and associate editor at Salt City Hoops. First off, Dan, a pleasure once again to get you on and talk Utah Jazz basketball with you. Thank you.
Of course. Nice to be here.
Let's dive right into it. Trade deadline tomorrow. The Jazz have been in numerous rumors as far as, you know, players that could be on the move. If it's Rodney Hood or if it's Alec Burks or if it's Derek Favors. I've seen rumors with Ricky Rubio even. I don't think the Jazz are going to make any massive moves, but you and I were talking a bit off of the cuff, and you're on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. You think that in the next 24 hours, the Jazz are going to be extremely busy.
Yeah, I think that there are three or four players that, for different reasons, it just makes sense for the Jazz to see what they could get for those players in the next, you know, 24, I guess a little less than 24 hours now. You know, particularly Joe Johnson, Rodney Hood, Alec Burks, and Derek Favors, although I've kind of moved him to his own little subcategory, which is interesting. But, you know, those are just guys who, for different reasons, it's not entirely clear right now that they're part of the Jazz's long-term plans. And if they're not part of those long-term plans, then yeah, I think you have to see if there's something else that makes more sense or that parlays some of their value into something that will help further down the road when Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert-led Jazz are ready to start contending again.
Okay, let's start with Rodney Hood here for a moment, because I could go either way. I'm a big Rodney Hood guy. I have been for quite some time. But looking at it, and maybe this is why I'm kind of stuck on Rodney Hood, you want to make sure that you're not moving potential all-star wings. And I don't know if we're letting that potential go right now with Rodney Hood and we're saying, okay, look, he's not an all-star caliber guard, but at the same time, I'm always very wary on giving up on wing players, on guard players. So Rodney Hood falls into that category, but the fact remains, if you're not willing to pay this guy in the offseason, you probably should explore getting something for him now.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting place to start because he actually told Yahoo Sports today that he expects to be traded, or at least he told Shams Charania of Yahoo Sports that he wouldn't be surprised if he were traded. So, you know, that's interesting. I think you're right about Rodney and particularly about giving up really good wing players. And, you know, the NBA is kind of short on that scoring wing prototype right now. That's a valuable piece to hold, and because of that, I don't think the Jazz can afford to just give him away. At the same time, Donovan Mitchell's rise as kind of the new number one scorer of the Jazz now and going forward reframes Rodney Hood's role a little bit. And so I think that they've just started to think about, okay, with Donovan Mitchell scoring the way he's been scoring and with him becoming kind of the central two-guard of the future plans, how does that make Rodney Hood fit into the construct of a future ostensibly contending Jazz? Like, as they build a team that can compete for, you know, deep playoff runs and maybe at some point championships, how does Rodney Hood fit into that? And I think that that answer has changed since Donovan Mitchell, you know, became as prominent as he has. So I think that's the reason why they're discussing Rodney. He's also probably one of their best assets because he's a 17-point-per-game scorer that shoots almost 40% from three, and whatever team acquires his rights is also going to have the ability to match any offer he receives as a restricted free agent this summer. So for all those reasons, he's a valuable guy. He's someone who could, you know, potentially be the outgoing asset if the Jazz are going to make, you know, a major move that adds an impact player or at least a player with potential to be an impact player.
Well, speaking of impact players, another guy that just can't, he's never been able to escape the trade rumors, and it's Derek Favors. And now that he's in the last year of an
expansion,
I almost feel bad for the guy because, I mean, again, he just can't seem to escape the trade rumors. And now he's in the last year of that contract, and you know what? He's one of the most valuable trade chips, I think, going into the trade deadline. I think it's a name that you definitely have to watch. And as far as the Jazz improved play, and again, you and I talked about this off the cuff, a lot of credit has to go to Derek Favors on the way this team is played over the past 6-7 games.
Well, exactly. I think so. The Jazz have won 6 in a row. They've won 8 of their last 10. One of the key protagonists behind that turnaround has been Favors. And so, you know, one question I get from fans a lot these days is whether the Jazz's recent improved play is going to change the way they approach the trade deadline. And largely, I think no, because the players that they have been, I think, aggressive about shopping around have not been as central to this turnaround. But Favors is the exception. Favors has been playing really, really well. He's been playing well next to Rudy Gobert, which was a big question and something that wasn't the case earlier in the season. But all of a sudden, teams just can't score or stop the Jazz when Rudy and Derek are on the floor together. And so I think that gives the Jazz a little bit of pause on trading Derek. Now, he's also not going to bring a great asset back in a trade just because, unlike Rodney, who I just mentioned is heading into restricted free agency, Derek is heading into unrestricted free agency. So a team that acquires him is going to be acquiring his services for the next 2 months, and then they don't know beyond that if they're going to be able to keep him. So, he's a rental because of that. I don't think the asset return is going to be quite as great. But on the other hand, it would kind of sting the Jazz if they gambled on Favors being able to stick around and be a part of the future, and then he leaves with them getting no return back this summer as a free agent. So he's a tough one. He's a tough one to solve for. But I will say this. He's been really important to their recent stretch, and he also seems to be having a really good time with this current Jazz group. And it's the first time in a long time I've watched him play and interact with dudes, and it just looks like he's having fun again, and that's great.
Sure, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. But when we talk about Derek Favors, and I hate to go back this far, but especially when you're on a smaller market team that doesn't necessarily have the greatest reputation with luring in, you know, mates, the Jazz at one particular time, lost Paul Millsap and lost Al Jefferson, two All-Stars at that particular time, for absolutely nothing. And maybe I'm bringing up the comparison because, again, we're talking about a big. If you lose three bigs in the course of, I don't know, what, six, seven, 8 years, and you get nothing in return, that has a long-term impact on the franchise.
Sure, it does. I mean, I will say this. I think the losing a player for nothing, you know, quote-unquote nothing argument, I get why it looks that way and why it feels that way. And, you know, I was a big believer in Paul Millsap, and I had covered Paul Millsap's entire career in Utah. I knew Paul well, and that was a tough one to watch him leave and see the Jazz get nothing back in direct return for that. But here's the thing. The cap space that opened up when Paul Millsap and Al Jefferson left allowed the Jazz to go out and make a trade where they got some assets back from Golden State, and one of those assets became Rodney Hood.
Sure.
That trade also opened up minutes for Derek Favors to improve into a 16-8 guy. That decision to let those guys walk also resulted in the rebuilding process that yielded Dante Exum and later on Donovan Mitchell. So, I mean, the Jazz will, you know, even if Derek Favors walks in free agency, they'll figure out a way to parlay that situation into something that makes sense for their future. But I get what you're saying. I mean, it's tough to have a guy who spends 7 years on your team getting better and, you know, improving, especially, I mean, let's remember, the Jazz traded a superstar to get Derek Favors. Favors was part of the return when the Jazz finally cut bait on Deron Williams. So to trade your superstar for a guy, develop him for 7 years, and then, you know, you bear through all the injury troubles, and just as he's getting healthy again and just as he's starting to contribute at a high level again, you know, he walks away. I think that would be psychologically tough. It just depends on what the Jazz do with the resulting assets and the resulting cap situation if he does walk away.
Again, right now we're being joined by Dan Clayton, columnist and associate editor at Salt City Hoops. You did mention Joe Johnson. I've also heard rumblings of a potential buyout on the Joe Johnson front. So if he has not moved by the trade deadline, what are the odds this guy finishes the season in a Jazz uniform?
Yeah, I think Joe is the reason why I feel pretty confident saying that the Jazz roster will definitely not look the same a few days from now, because I think the Jazz are pretty determined to let Joe go find a playoff team that he can help. And I don't think that that'll happen via trade, because, you know, most playoff teams are not in a position where they could take on Joe Johnson's $10.5 million salary. But if they're not able to find a trade taker for Joe, I do think that they will let him out of that contract in exchange for a little bit of a discount. And I do think he'll be playing somewhere else by, you know, a week or two from now.
Alec Burks, kind of the same situation. I mean, obviously not a buyout, but I mean, this is another name that I would assume the Jazz would like to get out from underneath this contract. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, you're absolutely right, Jordan. That's the main reason why I think Alec Burks keeps coming up in the discussion, because, frankly, he just makes too much for what his role is on the Jazz. This year he makes $10.8 million. Next year he'll make $11.5 million. That's a little tough when we're talking about a guy who has fallen to 11th man. You know what I mean? Royce O'Neal, the undrafted rookie, has risen up and taken Alec Burks' role from him as a backup wing, and all of a sudden Alec Burks is a guy who only plays when another wing is hurt. And I just don't think you can be paying your 11th man eight-figure salaries in today's NBA and be competitive, and that's really going to limit what the Jazz are able to do this summer if they still have those, you know, that $11 million salary hanging on their sheet. So with him, I do think that there is a notion of, you know, trying to move that salary. But again, right now in the NBA, there is a dearth of scoring wings. So there will be teams that will take interest in Alec Burks. I don't know that the Jazz will get a great amount of value back because the salary is tough. But there are reportedly teams that are calling about Alec Burks, and you know, they'd have to make salaries match, so they would have to send something back Utah's way. I mean, I'll give you an example just because I was playing with the numbers earlier. Oklahoma City has reportedly asked about Alec Burks, and without getting too into the math, they because they're a team that's paying the luxury tax, the salaries have to match almost exactly on any trade involving the Thunder. And so it's hard to imagine them putting together a trade package for Alec Burks that works financially without including at least one and maybe both of Alex Abrines and Patrick Patterson. And those are two guys that are kind of having down years, but they're good players. So, I mean, like, that's what you could get in exchange for Alec Burks, is maybe a reclamation project, maybe a player who is not having the best of years this year, but who the Jazz believe in a more structured system could have a little bit of a renaissance.
All right, Dan, we're going to end with this. And I saw you mention this on Twitter earlier today. And so for me, as soon as I saw this news earlier today, I thought the exact same thing. Blown away by the fact that the Clippers are going to extend Lou Williams, based on the fact with all the rumors circulating, especially around the Clippers after they deal Blake Griffin, Lou Williams signing a contract extension with the Clippers obviously directly impacts the Utah Jazz and the trade market value on someone like Rodney Hood, right?
Yeah, and signed for like a really below market rate.
I mean,
his extension is going to pay him $8 million a year, and I know that sounds like a lot to you and me, but in NBA terms, especially in today's NBA economy, that's role player money. And Lou Williams is their leading scorer. So the joke I made is he must really like palm trees. He must have really not wanted to leave Southern California. What that does for the Jazz and for the trade market is it takes a guy out of the trade market. Lou Williams can't be traded now because of that extension. Can't be traded for 6 months. So now there's one less, scoring wing out on the market, but there's still the same number of teams that are looking for scoring wings. So I think that makes it a little bit more likely that eventually someone will pony up the right asking price for a Hood or a Burks type. But yeah, it was a surprising extension.
Dan, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, so I write and edit for saltcityhoops.com. That's mostly where my work appears these days. But you can also give me a follow on Twitter. I'm Dan Clayton with a zero for the O, so Dan Clayton, zero N, where I tweet everything I write at the various sites I write for. So, thanks for having me. Fun to talk about this stuff, and obviously it'll be a wild 24 hours for the Jazz one way or another.
Right. Definitely looking forward to it. Always look forward to the conversation. Dan, you're one of the best Utah Jazz minds that we know. So again, thank you for the time, and hopefully we talk again soon.
All right, great. Thanks, Jordan.
Again, Dan Clayton of Salt City Hoops taking out the time to break down the Utah Jazz trade deadline rumors and the possible moves. We've got a break for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
It is National Signing Day for college football. You know, Georgia had a legendary day. First off, this is a lot of the reason why I don't talk about National Signing Day on Drive Time Sports too often. For one, I mean, really, do you want to sit here and listen to high school kids from all over the country that you probably never watched? Odds are no. But at the same time, I take the recruiting classes with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it's a pretty overrated day.
Well, I don't think it's an overrated day, but I think the idea of picking who the number one team is based off of
high school kids.
Right, because maturity, the way these kids are developing. I mean, look, 3 years from now, a kid who's a two-star athlete or a three-star athlete can very easily be a five-star and vice versa. So, I look at it and say, yes, Georgia had a legendary day today. Number one recruiting class, hands down. They landed seven five-star recruits, 15 four-star recruits, 4 3-star recruits as well. No 2-star recruits. Georgia, the number one recruiting class, one of the highest scores that we've ever seen as far as the rankings go. Ohio State comes in at number 2. Texas in at number 3. See, that's Tom Herman doing work, and I think that's a lot of what people expected from him. Texas lands 2 5-star recruits, 17 4-star recruits. USC comes in at number 4. They made a huge jump because they landed a couple of guys late. So your Trojans in the top 5 at number 4, according to 24/7.
Yeah, USC was outside the top 10, and they closed strong and finished 4. And they needed some corner help and on the defensive side of the football. And Clay Helton, who just got that contract extension, closed out pretty well.
Penn State, number 5. Clemson, number 6. Alabama, number 7. It's a steep drop for Alabama. I'm sure they're going to be just fine. They do land 2 5-star recruits and 12 4-star recruits. Now, 8 goes to Miami. Mark Richt still doing some work, and Well, Lincoln down in Oklahoma, he's number 9. They get 1 5-star recruit, 12 4-star recruits. Brian Kelly in Notre Dame at number 10. They land 14 4-star recruits. I don't think it was a bad outing today for Notre Dame at all. They landed one of the stud tackles in this recruiting class as well. Got him to shift from UCLA, so the Irish, I thought, did quite well. As far as Utah schools go, the Utes just inside the top 40 at number 38. No 5-stars, 2 4-stars, 18 3-stars. And they finished just slightly better than Stanford, who worked their way up. Yesterday, Stanford was outside of the top 60. They climb all the way inside the top 40. As far as BYU goes, you'd have to go all the way down outside of the top 50, which is not good news for Kalani Sitake. But then again, I don't think anyone's really expecting BYU to have a top-notch recruiting class. But they are number 82, Travis. No 5-stars, no 4-stars, 14 3-star recruits.
That's got to improve, because they're behind teams like Temple and Southern Miss and Kansas, Colorado State and Tulane and teams like that. And
Marshall, BYU's, Florida
and
Atlantic.
BYU's, their name recognition is better than those teams.
I would say so. I would agree. Not a whole lot of talk geared towards signing day, but if you got that itch for college football, definitely secures it. You see the kid Copeland, the wide receiver? I felt bad for that kid today.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
Okay, so he's one of the, I think he was like number 5, if I'm not mistaken, for wide receivers in the country. And he had it narrowed down to Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida. And he sits down at the table. He's got all the hats. His mom's sitting next to him rocking an Alabama hoodie and a Tennessee beanie. And Jacob Copeland, who again is a stud wideout, decides to pick up the Florida Gator hat. And his mom just got up and left.
Yeah. She wasn't happy.
She came back apparently afterwards and gave him a hug. I think he's okay.
Yeah.
Florida's not a bad school. I think no. He's going to be okay.
Yeah, it's the kid's choice. That's where he wants to go.
I felt bad for him.
Yeah.
You could tell it bothered him.
Yeah, it did. It wasn't a good look.
It was on national television.
Yeah, she wanted him to go to Alabama. He wants to make his own name and go to Florida.
Look, I'm a huge Notre Dame fan. If my daughter was ever in a situation to go play basketball or whatever at Notre Dame, I don't know, and she decided to go to USC... I wouldn't walk out.
You would be putting the two up in the air and you'd be going fight on.
I would. Yeah, I would. Hey, we're out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We're going to be back again tomorrow to do it again. Again, live coverage coming up tonight. We get Emory playing host to the Grand Red Devils. That is the final home game of the regular season. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.